This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And a good evening to you for Wednesday, January 18th, 2012. My name is Doug Kelly. So good to have you. And of course, I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Good to be back.
Yes, it is.
Another week.
Another week, another radio show.
We're still here. It's 2012. We're well into January. Still alive.
Not dead yet. But, hey,
although I'm freezing, I will tell you that much.
Well, great white north.
Yes, it is.
So tonight we're going to be talking with our special guest, David Blender, and we're going to be talking about chasing and catching your dreams. Talk a little bit about how he's done it. We welcome all of those who are listening live, as well as those listening to the archive. If you'd like to be part of it, you can certainly ask questions in the chat room, or you can give us a call. The number's there on your screen, 714-459-3973. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, Reverend John Hightower is screening your calls tonight, as usual. So, we have a guest with us tonight, David Blender. He's a hypnosis practitioner. He has a practice in the greater Chicago area, Hypnotic Therapeutics. So if you're in the greater Chicago area, you need to look him up. His website is hypnotictherapeutics.com, so you can take a look at that. But David is a sharp guy, a nice guy, and no, he didn't pay me to say that. David, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello. Thank you, John. And Doug and Vicki, thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on with us tonight. You know, David's also a doctoral candidate and pertinent, getting real close to graduation with the IMHS program, metaphysicsinstitute.org. And, you know, David, I've been really impressed with how you've done throughout the degree program. Obviously, you've been around the block a time or two, huh?
Thank you very much, Doug. I appreciate those words. Lived a little bit of life.
And when we were talking here a week or two or three ago, whatever it was, you know, I was asking, you know, what's important to you? You know, what's the message? What do you want to get out? And you had talked about this very topic, you know, chasing and catching your life dream. And tell us a little bit of background on you. In terms of your business life and what you were doing, you know, where did you start out with and we'll kind of work up to why and when you made changes.
Absolutely. Well, I started out of college about 30 years ago. At least it'll be 30 years this coming spring. And graduated from a school in Dallas by the name of Southern Methodist University. Had always been desirous of having a consulting career, working for large global, international consulting concerns and being involved in investment banking. And in fact, I did manifest that for myself. I became, right out of college, one of the very first hires ever into a global consulting firm with only an undergraduate degree. Typically, they were looking for people with 10 to 15 years experience and graduate studies and or degrees in business, which I do not have. And long story short, I interviewed with several of the top firms and was provided a couple of offers. I elected to go with a global consulting firm at that time, and someone took me under their wing and began to mentor me in the process of doing research and analysis and corporate strategy and financing alternatives. And in fact, for many years, that's exactly what I did. I grew very quickly through the ranks. Was the youngest consultant and youngest manager and senior manager in this firm ever.
Wow.
And also the very first direct hire out of school, and went on to go to the executive offices in New York and worked there for the chairman and deputy chairman of the firm, and basically established a merger and acquisition and investment banking concern. So the career was going quite well. I was in my mid-20s doing beyond expectations and very
sounds
happy.
Like it.
it was an experience, and it was a good experience. I got to travel the globe and work with people that and meet people that I wouldn't probably otherwise have had that opportunity to do. and was quite exciting, quite lucrative, and everything was pretty much where I had hoped it would be and beyond. And then, as life goes, things changed. And,
and you had a near-death experience.
No, I just became a parent.
That'll do it. That'll do it every time.
So you're saying you had a near-death experience then?
Good one.
Absolutely. No, I became a single parent, and that was unexpected as well. And as a sole guardian and having sole custodialship of my child at that time, I had to make some serious and drastic decisions with my career, because being on the road 6 or 7 days a week and traveling 20 or 30,000 miles a week isn't conducive to being home and taking care of a child. So there really wasn't a choice for me. I the choice was very definite, and I obviously chose my daughter. Now I had different problems where, challenges are presented with being a parent. I also had to figure out, now what? I can't catch a plane. I can't go meet with clients. I can't create large billings every month. And I had to explore other avenues and other career options. And that's not when I chose hypnosis and hypnotherapy. I did a little exploring, a little rambling. I had my own consulting business for a while, but yet it still took me in the direction of having to travel and be gone at large gaps of time. And as my daughter became older in her early childhood, I'd say 4, 5, 6, 7 age range, she began to grow tired and weary of the trips. Sometimes you plan on being home on a Friday, but weather and business conditions change, and
planes.
You're not coming home for weeks at a time. And not what I had wanted for her or for me. So interesting how life takes you in different directions. I did take another consulting job, but it was a local one, one that I didn't have to travel. I was actually running a large practice, and I had people that were traveling who worked with me, but I rarely had to catch a plane. One day I was going to meet with a client, and it was middle of winter. It was in December, and this was about 7 or 8 years ago. And as I'm moving across the parking lot here in the Chicago area, where there's lots of ice and snow.
Yeah, Chicago.
I hear a near-death experience coming. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I almost wished it was. It would have been less painful.
I couldn't resist, David. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I was heading to my car to meet with a client, and at a pretty rapid pace, and I hit some black ice. Long story short, I shattered my right knee.
Ouch.
And quite painful and very immobile. And the prognosis wasn't that great. And they
can you repeat? So the prognosis was
what? The prognosis was not good. And the doctors in the emergency room wanted to exercise my knee.
Exercise that knee.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Casting out the bones.
Ouch, yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So I elected to get other opinions and had reparative surgery and went through months and months of rehabilitation, but still was told I would not be able to walk or function or do any of the things that I had done in my life prior, and I was quite active.
That's a near-death experience.
It was a humbling experience, and one that stretched me personally and mentally and emotionally in many ways. But that's when I started to dabble in hypnosis, and I started reading books on self-hypnosis and pain control and mind control, and not mind control in a bad way, but mind control in a good way. And the doctors said, here's what you should do, and this is the regimen and therapy that we prescribe, and maybe in a year's time you might be able to drive and function close to what you were once doing. And I refused. Yes, I just refused to give in to what I was being told by the medical profession, and I thought I had nothing to lose. So sitting for hours at a time, unable to get up out of my chair for months at a time. I had plenty of time to read and study. I had plenty of time to get on my computer and explore and learn.
Boy, and the cosmic kicked your butt.
That's exactly what happened.
Wow. Yeah.
Exactly what happened. And I started to play around and started to basically control the pain by turning it down in my mind. And I would play little games with myself. And over time, the doctors were actually kind of amazed that I was starting to get up and move around. I was actually putting weight on my leg. I was actually starting to ride a bicycle, a stationary bicycle. I was using a treadmill. I was starting to walk with crutches and things that they didn't want to tell me that I couldn't do, but I could see it in their faces that it wasn't something they expected me to be able to do. And I changed professions. I realized that if I can do this for myself, if I can dial down the pain, if I can begin to visualize and through imagery see myself achieving different things, walking, jogging, running, biking, horseback riding, all the things that I used to do and still do, that if I can do this for myself, that this is real, it's powerful, and I should be able to help other people as well.
Opened up my practice. What I call.
Go ahead.
Sorry, we lost you there just for a second.
Yeah. Okay. So about your practice.
About 2.5-3 years ago, I opened up my practice. I had been prior to that dabbling with other people and just exploring with ways to help them lose weight, quit smoking, overcome fears and obstacles, and phobias and limitations. And as I started to see one success after another success after another success, people were basically telling me I should have my own practice. I should do this to help mm-hmm. other people. And that's exactly what I did, and I started Hypnotic Therapeutics.
You know, this is a classic case when of what I say, life meets you. So no matter what sometimes we have in mind for ourselves, life has something in mind for us, and obviously, one thing after another, this is what I call meeting your destiny in a way. Do you think?
I think there's something there more than meets the eye, and I would agree with you. I would agree with you, Vicki.
So apparently, at this point, I mean, you got into hypnosis because, well, you know, you were interested in it, obviously. And you really couldn't do what you once did. At least you were out of commission for a bit. As you began to get involved with hypnosis and the mind and, you know, a.k.a. metaphysics and different things of that nature, what was your thinking? I mean, was anything opening? Was your mind opening to possibilities, to other endeavors, purposes that you hadn't considered before?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think that's one of the main underlying motivations for starting Hypnotic Therapeutics. And in everything I tend to do it to extremes. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not so good. But I wanted to know all that I could know about hypnosis. I wanted to learn all of the different protocols. I wanted to know all the various applications and how this could benefit people beyond just pain control. I had, prior to opening up Hypnotic Therapeutics, prior to my injury and accident, I have a couple of friends. One is actually not too far away from, I believe, where you live, Doug, and another friend in the Maryland area who, in the late 90s, 99-2000 time frame, came back into my life, actually, after years of not being in my life, to help me to, I believe, heal on a spiritual level, an emotional and spiritual level. And they started to introduce me to different forms of meditation, yoga. I had always dabbled in the martial arts and enjoyed the martial arts. And through the martial arts, you do learn how to control and to utilize your energy, your ki, or your chi, depending on the style of martial arts that you practice. But this was taking me to a level that I had not experienced before, and I had some time distortion experiences, very good ones, where I thought just a few minutes had passed and it was actually many, many hours. Knowledge that seemed to come to me that I had not had any good explanation or reason for why it just is there when I needed it. I was experimenting with different forms of yoga, learning about karma, many other forms of expanding consciousness, if you will. So yes, it's something that I have considered. I have worked with on a personal level, and do believe it's part and parcel of what I do now.
Interesting. So you got going with your hypnosis practice, and bringing it back now to this topic of chasing and catching your dream. How did you do that? I mean, I know you don't have to repeat everything you said, but you know, how would you relate it to that context?
Well, the way I would look at it is this: it's quite easy to catch your dreams if you know what your dreams are. And some people know what they are. Some people need a metaphorical hit on the side of the head to realize what their dreams and direction in life should be. And I'm referring to myself. But I think you have to elevate your standards. You know, anytime you sincerely want to make a change, the first thing you need to do is raise your standards. And expect and demand more from yourself and from those around you, if you will. You have to have some tolerance, but you can't have tolerance for mediocrity and procrastination, and it just robs you of your potential. So I'd say raise your standards first, and then change your limiting beliefs. So often people have desires and wants and a direction that they just are afraid to explore because they just lack the confidence in themselves. So they don't even try.
And so, okay, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, that's true. You know, a lot of folks just don't know what their dream is. And we've talked about that on the show before, and of course I've recommended that you answer a simple question that can be very difficult, and that question is, what do I call a good day? And so if people will answer that question, what do you call a good day, and then extrapolate that, it will help you to determine what your purpose is and the direction you want to go. There is a question from Kathy in the chat room. Did you become licensed, or was it from your own self-education that you went on to your hypnosis practice?
That's a great question. I, in the state that I practice, there is no licensing per se, and many states don't have licensing for hypnosis and hypnotherapy, and they're actually treated as two different things. Most of the original learning I had was through books. I had never met another hypnotist or hypnotherapist until, not even 2 years ago, and I did connect with a couple of people who are well known and became mentors of mine and eventually trained and certified me. So I do possess many certifications in many various areas of specialty. But no, I'm not licensed. I am self-taught, and on top of the self-education, was mentored by a couple top-notch world-renowned actually hypnotists and hypnotherapists. And recently became certified and licensed as a trainer under an international board. As far as legal licensing, there, other than one or two states that I know of, there really isn't.
Yeah. Okay, good. So chasing and catching your dream, you know, you also do coaching, spiritual counseling type stuff along with your hypnosis. What do you recommend in an in-depth manner for people who want to, you know, chase their dream and how to go about it? Where do they start? What do they need to keep in mind along the way?
I think they need to have a vision of what it is that they want, and truly ask themselves, you know, what is it that they feel that they were born to do? What is it that excites them now and possibly for many years? And what have you wanted to do that you kept putting off in your life? Most of the time I find when I'm working with clients, it's fear-based limitations. Mm-hmm. It's fear of failure. It's fear of success.
There for a second, oh. But I would ask if...
We lost you for a second, David.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. If you'll surrender to the fear and just allow and submit yourself to the path and the direction that you want to go off, and then listen to the answers to the questions I just posed, you'll have a better understanding of how to move in the direction that you want to move in. You know, I think it's far more fearful to not live your life's purpose, to not follow your dreams, to not follow your goals, and at the end of your life here on earth to look back with regret and remorse. I do what I can to help people to manifest their dreams and to move past their limitations and their excuses and their rationalizations for why things haven't come to fruition for them the way they've wanted it to be.
Do you think that this is a systemic problem, though, with people? Like, it's in society? It's like, this is kind of rampant. I mean, society runs on fear. And that people minimize themselves in order to find a place to belong and just to get by. Do you think that that contributes to why people minimize their dreams?
I think it's not only contributes, I think it's a key source. If you think about it, when we come into this world as babies, as children, we really don't have a lot of fear. The fear comes from a couple of different places. I mean, obviously the acculturation process starts with your parents, but when you are old enough, and nowadays there's preschools, but I'm old enough to say back when I was a child, there weren't preschools. But when you started kindergarten, you started school, you started an acculturation process, and you started a whole new line, if you will, of thinking and conditioning and reprogramming away from what wasn't natural for you when you were younger. And the whole education, and this, you're going to get me off on a tangent here, and I'll try not to go there, but the whole educational system, since I think about the turn of the Industrial Revolution, has been geared toward conditioning, reprogramming, instilling fear, and not really producing creative minds. Now, a lot of people might argue that vein, but when you think about it, we're all going through school. We're all, even the elementary, secondary education process, all the way through the higher levels of education, universities and colleges, we're all being conditioned to come out with a piece of paper and be ready for a job, which means that you're being conditioned to do a task or do tasks and do it well. If you're told what to do, and you're told how to get it, or in many instances, how to get it done, you'll typically get it done. But if you're given too much latitude, most people, not all people, they don't know what to do with that freedom. They don't know how to think creatively. They don't know how to problem solve. They don't know how to have the initiative to manifest outcomes, whether it's for their employer, for themselves, their family, or all of the above. So I think, you know, if there's fault, it's in the systems that we've created. You know, back before the Industrial Revolution, there wasn't this type of an educational process where you were primarily taught to do what's asked of you and to come up with a solution once you've been given the framework. It was more of an inductive way of learning where you had to actually creatively think and conceptualize and figure out how to accomplish a task or an outcome on your own without any sort of direction. And I think it's becoming more and more the other way with each successive generation in this country and other developed nations.
Well, welcome to the world of the factory worker.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
All right, we have a... go ahead, Vicki.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say where it diminishes individuality, and what you're doing and what we all try to do is encourage individuality. So that kind of sum it up, yeah.
That does.
All right, we have a caller with a question. Hewlin, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening. I've been very much enjoying the program, and I agree with everything being said, and I actually, through life experiences, have empowered myself. I've had a lot of bizarre experiences that I learned from, and I am a self-taught expert in what I term creative utilization of information, and I have a big vision and mission of bringing spirituality into global economics and combining it with unconditional love based on all the experiences that I've had and can document a lot of stuff.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Spiritualized money. I love it.
Mm. Oh, it's
sorry, no offense.
No, it's going to change the whole dynamics. It's going to force these big multinationals to be transparent, highly ethical and moral, and in addition be responsible to their employees, their customers, the environment, and the communities. Otherwise, they're not going to be around long in the future.
No, that will be a change, yeah. So did you have a question, or was it just a statement you wanted to make?
Well, basically, I wanted to see if any of you are familiar or thought about the simplicity of just grabbing bits of information and creating opportunities out of nowhere.
Yeah, people do that. I mean, it's been done quite a few times. People take a unique, you know, invention or idea or approach and go with it, and they can be very successful. That's my
take. Well, now, if you think in terms of collaboration, you can empower yourself very quickly with today's technologies if you just learn how to think in a different way, interact with existing technologies and with each other. So the control is going out the window, and the collaboration is going to be the new wave.
I agree. I mean, I've been preaching that for a long time in terms of leadership training and much of what you're talking about. But and I personally think we'll get to that one day, you know, where these companies are transparent, where they are doing the right thing, you know, doing no harm to all of that you mentioned, including the employees, the environment, and so forth. So, yeah, I think that's an excellent goal, and I think it's something that I wish more of companies would work toward. I don't know when it will happen.
David, yes. Aside from working with individuals in your practice, are you also extending out into businesses? Have you considered that, or have you started to do that?
Yes, great question. Yes, I have. I have a wellness consulting and coaching practice where I utilize a lot. I don't call what I do when I'm working with corporate clients metaphysics or hypnosis or neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, or any of those things because, you know, they just, well, for one thing, it's not something that I think would set well in that environment. There's not as much open-mindedness and open thinking. But I do engage all of the principles and all of the tools to bear on particular issues or problems. Oftentimes, there are limitations in the marketing and sales process of an organization, and there are many techniques in what I call waking hypnosis that can be engaged in coaching and counseling people to enhance their productivity and their sales. Aligning personal goals with corporate goals. If you want to see productivity in a corporation shoot up, if you can understand what's motivating your people and align that with goals and objectives and outcomes within an organization from the corporate perspective, you have a marriage made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Wellness programs, reducing absenteeism in the workforce and turnover, and reducing fears and phobias and anxieties. There's many executives that are absolutely petrified to have to get up in front of a large group or a small group and present. It's just I see people paralyzed and crippled with the thought of having to speak in front of others.
Good points.
And, yeah, those are some ways.
And also helping people to get along better with each other in the workplace.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. From a direct report to subordinate ways in motivating and incentivizing people and praising them and rewarding them, not just monetarily or through issuances of trophies or awards, although those can be part and parcel of it, but the way things are phrased or couched or coached or bringing people together with differences to achieve a common desired goal. That's part of aligning those personal goals, corporate goals, and the needs of a department or a larger organization.
Good points. Hewlin, thanks for your call. Appreciate your viewpoints.
Well, thank you.
You know, I might just, sorry, I just might inject here a question in the chat for David. Would you not say that, I'll just repeat this, would you say that what you were doing, immersed in consulting, you hadn't thought of what you would be doing now? And that maybe we should be more open to see what direction the universe is guiding to direct us toward. So I guess the question, if I can paraphrase this, would, did you see any indication when you were younger that you could be or would be doing something like you're doing now?
Yes and no. If you'd have said to me 30 years ago that this is what I would be doing, I probably would have laughed and laughed at the person hysterically because I could never have seen myself in this capacity. Yet now, looking back in retrospect, oftentimes I was the consultant that would have to go in and be involved with merging resources, merging human resources, eliminating positions, consolidating resources, and that meant people were losing jobs. And I always went above and beyond the call of what I was asked to do. It wasn't just for me realigning an organization and restructuring it, but it was trying to keep the existing resources, with human resources I'm referring to, within the organization. So I always felt compelled to set up, if you will, without knowing what I was doing, coaching and counseling sessions, trying to find out what other talents they had, what flexibility these people were, and willingness they had to do something different. Because obviously the first thing people do when they are going to experience change is they resist it instead of embrace it. They look at it as an obstacle instead of an opportunity. So in order to save as many jobs as I possibly could within the purview that I had, I would try to find other ways to integrate resources that seemed to be redundant so I didn't have to eliminate them. So in a way, I was doing similar things without knowing that I was.
Different expression of the same thing, really, but
exactly.
Now you would be more honing it in. Would that be fair?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's an addendum here,
if
I can say, an addendum here to the question to you, kind of a statement question, but there's a lot of people who simply cannot answer the question of what is their dream. And maybe it's they do think too hard or, not listening to their instincts. But I encounter this very frequently, David, in my practice, that asking people, what is your passion? What is your interest? And it's very difficult for a lot of people to reach deep and find the things that they love to do. What kinds of suggestions do you have?
Right. And that mindset is exactly what I was describing before. When people are acculturated and conditioned the way they are and educated the way they are now, they're not able, they're able to think to do for others, but they're not able to think to do for themselves. So
yeah.
There's many ways of accomplishing how do we find that and passion or that dream. Oftentimes it's the simplest of things. It's what you enjoy or what you tend to be very good at that you enjoy. Now, just because you enjoy something and you're very good at it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make money doing that. But it's certainly the right step or steps in the right direction. Often when I'm working with clients who have motivational issues or organizational issues and I'm coaching them, but actually I'm playing more the role of the hypnotist or hypnotherapist. I'm trying to find out what they want. What is it that you want me to do? And I throw the questions back at them. And oftentimes what I have to do is take them away from where they are now in their line of thinking, anywhere but where they are now when I ask a particular question, to get them to look back to see what other opportunities, what other avenues, what other areas of interest that stimulate them, that motivate them. And those questions that I suggested before about, you know, what is it that you feel you were born to do? Not everybody can answer that. What do you have a passion for? What do you enjoy doing when you're not working or you're not doing things that you feel you have to do? What do you excel at in those things that you have to do? And is there something there that's of interest to you? So it is a job of working through the maze, if you will, peeking around the bend and exploring from different perspectives that oftentimes people don't know how to do or find a way to do.
I think that's excellent, yeah. And the whole concept is excellent because there are a lot of people who just don't quite know. And, you know, maybe you just need to let things settle. Go into a room alone. Let things settle. Let the room settle. Let your thoughts settle. And look inside. You know, there's a lot of ways of looking at what's your dream, what should you be doing. And I think that the point is well made. Listening to your instincts is one, which is what you've been talking about. And listening to what your spirit, if you will, is leading you toward. And all the things we've been talking about. But there's also something else I have actually seen where a person may not have any burning passion to do anything in particular. You know, they enjoy their life. They you know, they do their job. They enjoy their job. Whatever it is they're enjoying their life.
Then
and they don't have a desire to go set the world on fire. They don't have any particular thing. And I've seen these folks. And the thing I can say is, well, you know, what's wrong with that? As long as you're doing no harm, you're doing the right thing, and these folks were, gosh, you're living a good life. If it's up to you. What do you want? It's not
exactly
what society thinks you should want. It's not what your family or anybody else thinks you ought to be doing. What do you want to be doing?
Exactly. And so often everybody's concerned or people are concerned with what everybody else is thinking about them or what they think they should do or how they should conform or how they should present themselves or how they should look or at different times of the day, at different days, different weeks, different months. You're absolutely spot on. It's taking the time to hear yourself and to not put pressure on yourself to assess whether you really are content and satisfied with who you are as a person and with what you're doing now with your life. And if you are happy and satisfied answering those questions, what else do you need to do?
Good. Well put. There is a question in the chat room. My daughter is in high school. She wants to study genetics. At the same time, she wants to study fashion designing too. And I must tell you that she's equally good at both of these things. Should she pursue two things at the same time, or should she forget about fashion designing at the moment? What would you recommend to her?
Well, you know, I have a daughter that just started college, so I can relate to, at least you only have two things that your daughter's looking at. My daughter wanted to be everything from a rocket scientist to an astronaut to, an artist. I can't give your daughter that answer. And really, you know, truthfully, you can't either. You can be there to listen to her, to help her to think through what's really of interest and fascinating or what she thinks might be fascinating. Perhaps since she's in high school now, taking maybe there's a local community college that offers courses in both areas. Both things that she's interested in, or she
right.
can, you know, at least get a smattering or a taste of what might be a direction that would be of interest to her to pursue. And just because she takes one direction doesn't lock her in that direction forever. So allow her to explore, allow her to make mistakes. I know it's hard as parents to watch your children struggle and have to push themselves, but that's part of expanding themselves, as part of growing, it's part of maturing, it's part of learning. And she's young enough now that, you know, mistakes on this side of the fence isn't going to necessarily be indelibly ingrained in her for the rest of her life. So,
I agree with you. I think that, you know, if she's got these two interests or however many, she should pursue them at least to some degree, because you never know which one is going to take. It's like throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. And you got to do that at times because you never quite know. Like you, David, I would have never guessed I would be doing what I'm doing, you know, back when I was in my 20s or 30s. You know, I would have never guessed it. Never. I mean, my God, you know, to get certified in hypnosis, you know, I was about 40. It was about, what, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, something like that. You know, I would have never guessed that, ever. And to do what I'm doing today with the Metaphysics Church and with the school. And so that's the whole point. And I've told my son this very same thing. You know what? And this is some advice my dad gave me, and I thought it was excellent advice. He said, son, learn all you can learn during your 20s because you're not going to set the world on fire necessarily. That's a time to learn and grow and just become educated. When you get into your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, those are the prime times, you know. And I found that to be true. And it really, you know, I did start doing things in my 30s, but it was my 40s and, you know, into my 50s now that things really begin to take.
And I agree with that. The only thing that I maybe would first of all, Doug, I want to say, you know, I'm glad that you did take this direction because I know you're touching a lot of people's lives in a good way and influencing them and helping them to come to terms with what it is that they want to accomplish. So without you, without the school, without the church, there's a lot of people that wouldn't have the benefit of all those resources and yourself.
Thanks, and David.
Absolutely. So, but I also, the only part I would disagree with you or differ with you on is the age factor. I don't look in the mirror, and I'm be 53 in a couple of months. I don't look at myself in the mirror and say, there's a 53-year-old man. Wow, I only have a limited amount of things I can accomplish. I'm stuck in a rut. I can only do this. No, I don't see that at all. In fact, I'm more open-minded and younger in heart and spirit now at this age than I ever was in my teens and 20s, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't. Yeah.
I'll tell you all that I just can't. I can't hold all those pails of water anymore. So I look in the mirror and I see my age. There are some limitations that come with an older body, but the mind is still sharp as a tack.
Absolutely.
Good point. All right. So, you know, interesting discussion. You know, it's as we've been talking about these different things tonight, you know, hopefully you've heard some good ideas, some different ways of looking at it. This is where some meditation can come into play. And again, it doesn't have to be anything all, you know, mystical and weird. Just go into the quiet room, be alone with your thoughts, ask yourself, what do I call a good day? What makes me happy in life? You know, what are you drawn to? Those are the things that will help you to determine it if you haven't already. Now, what if you know what you want to do? You've got your dream. You know exactly what you want to do, at least at this point. You think that's what it is. And you feel held back. Maybe you're not sure what's holding you back. Well, David, you'd mentioned fear as one thing.
Yes.
And I love what you said, because what are you more afraid of? Getting to, you know, the end of your life, when you're on your deathbed, are you more afraid of not having at least tried to go after it? Or are you more afraid now of going after it? So I would be more afraid of not having tried. And I've said it a thousand times. You don't want to get to your deathbed and have a bad case of the if-onlys, the might-have-beens, you know, all that stuff. You need to chase it. Release the fear. What would you do if you could not fail?
That is the question, isn't it? If money wasn't an object and you could not fail, those are the two questions I ask. What is it that you would like to do?
Yep.
Because if you can answer, go ahead.
No, go ahead, David.
No, so if you can answer those two questions honestly, without any sort of external influence or without any sort of pressure from people close to you, family, friends, otherwise, then you know the answer. And then it's only a matter of what do I have to give up to get what I want.
We have a question in the chat. With your knowledge of hypnosis, have you tried taking your knowledge to horses or animals in general? And if so, and I guess that's directed at me. So, you know, I studied hypnosis when I was a very young girl. Actually, I was 21. And it was the most... Yeah, that's right. It was the single most powerful turning point in my life for understanding myself. And when we understand hypnosis as a state of mind, and we understand that we all have a state of mind occurring all the time, we begin to, I believe, become more self-observant. In self-observance, then you can apply yourself differently to any given situation. And it's the study of the self first. Would you gentlemen agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely do. In fact, I grew up in Texas, and I used to train and break and breed quarter horses for many years and show them, and among many other things I used to do in my younger days.
Awesome.
And you know what? My daughter, who is now heavily involved in horses and studying equine science, used to be amazed how I could walk into a field, a holding pen, a pasture, a stall, and horses would turn without me saying a word or motioning. They would just turn and walk over to me and hang their head in front of me. And she would ask me, "Dad, what are you doing?" And I said, "Honey, I'm communicating, but I'm not saying anything." And a horse, a dog, certain animals can mirror what's going on the inside of you. So if you're calm and relaxed and confident and poised and emit that confidence and poise and calmness, animals pick up on that. And they feel a sense of comfort and security, as do children. So go ahead.
And well, that's just, you know, there's something we've talked about on previous shows called primary perception that Clive Baxter had done with his polygraph machine attached to a plant. And he thought, well, you know, well, how would it react if I burned it? And instantly the plant reacted. And so, you know, when you think about consciousness and existence, the human mind, the capabilities of the human mind, you know, I personally believe that animals do read intent, and even on a subliminal level, if you will. You know, you may not even know it, and yet it's doing it. And I'd also like to add one other thing, too, on this question of hypnosis. I honestly would recommend anybody and everybody learning hypnosis, because it's not so much hypnotizing somebody is pretty much easy. It's the other stuff. It's the education you get about the mind and about how your unconscious mind works, your conscious mind works. It's a great education. So I would recommend it.
One of the comments that's come up about your relationship with animals, David, is the comment of alpha male. And I'm going to challenge that to say it has nothing to do with alpha male. Would you agree with that?
I agree to some extent, yes. I mean, I have a pack of dogs, and I am the alpha male. But
I agree.
That's a different issue. When I'm out in nature, when I'm out with animals, especially those that I don't know, some of which are deemed problematic, and used to be years ago, owners would bring them to me for me to retrain them, rehabilitate them, if you will. And it wasn't me about, maybe at first, it was about establishing dominance, but it's really more about connecting and creating a trust and a bond and a rapport.
Yeah.
And that's true with not just animals, it's true with people. When I'm working with people who have gone through horrific abuses, mentally, physically, emotionally, sexually, in every way, and they're suffering from real post-traumatic stress disorder, before I go into hypnosis, I'm actually doing hypnosis, but they don't know it. I'm establishing rapport, and I'm establishing context and intent, and I'm letting them know what's going to happen in advance. And all of that is, if you will, pre-framing what I'm about to do for them that they've asked me to do. So it's very similar in working with animals, except that they don't understand English. And I have to work through body posturing and through calmness and through different mannerisms that they can understand.
But it's really about trust.
It is about trust, very much so.
Yeah. Oh, you're just exciting me, David. I love this conversation. I do. It's it excites me because this is the message. It's all part of how we are relating to each other and communicating with each other. And we establish all these varying connections, but I applaud you for your work. It's very exciting work that you do. Congratulations.
Oh,
it's awesome.
Thank you so much. It's very rewarding for me. There's rarely a day that goes by where at the end of the day I haven't just jumped for joy for somebody who's transformed right before my eyes. I find it amazing. I never get tired of it.
Well, David, where do you see yourself going from here in the future? What's your direction? What are your goals?
Well, one of the things that I will be doing over this coming year and in many years to come is that I will be training and having seminars that initially it will be in the area of specialty that I have, which is conversational hypnosis and hypnotherapy, but I want to expand upon that. I want to be able to put myself in front of as many people as possible to help and enhance the lives of as many people as possible. And for me, that's what it's really all about. Everybody has a different mission and a different purpose, but I believe everything else falls in place when I'm doing what gives me such joy. And for me, it's helping, whether it's an individual, a group, an organization, a business, a stranger on the street, a client. It doesn't matter. If they're willing to change and they want the help, and those are the key things, I'm there for them. And so as many places as I can put myself in as much time as I have, that's what I'm going to be doing.
Well, that's a great answer. You know, and David, you're very close to earning your doctoral degree from metaphysicsinstitute.org, so we'll be calling you doctor before too long here. And I'd like to also tell those listening, if you're interested in learning more about metaphysics, more about hypnosis, more about a number of topics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. You can get your bachelor's, master's, doctoral degree in metaphysics, specializing in several different areas of your choice, including hypnosis, coaching, even paranormal, and there are some others there as well. David, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight.
Yes, Doug, thank you so much, David. It's
Doug
been
and
a
Vicky,
pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me on and for allowing me to be a part of the show and to share. Well, I've enjoyed it very much.
It's our pleasure, and we'll bring you back and unleash you on the audience again one day.
Be my pleasure.
All right, so we're gonna shift directions just for a few minutes. We just got about 6 minutes remaining, and we do have a caller on the line who has a question for Vicky. And Paula, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've enjoyed the program very much.
Well, good. I understand you have a question, Paula. Can you just tell me your birthday?
My birthday is December 22nd, 1963. And the young lady I'm trying to see if you can get in touch with, her name is Holly. She's my niece, and she was born December the 1st, 1987.
When you say get in touch with, is this somebody who's crossed over?
Yes.
Okay. Just bear with me a minute. This kind of plugging in just takes a second, so just bear with me, Paula. Did this occur about 3 years ago?
No, she just passed away the 7th of January this year.
Okay.
In our home.
Yeah, bless her. Was there something that occurred 3 years ago Is that when she took ill?
8 years ago, she had a severe head trauma injury, and
yeah.
they didn't properly intubate her.
Yeah, that's too much information for me. Yeah, that's. I'm sorry to hear that, Paula. I'm not getting a direct connection, to be honest. I think I'm tuning into you a little bit here, in that life has been quite changing for you, aside from. Obviously, this is a very difficult time for you with Holly and the experience of losing her to the other side. But aside from that, I get that you've had some pretty life-altering experiences also in the last 3 years. Does that make sense?
Very much so. Yeah, in fact, okay. I just moved the day she passed.
yeah, and the last 3 years has been... changing, but I just want to tell you, I think that this year, 2012, is going to be much better for you. And it's going to be a lot more secure, centered. You're going to feel a little bit more grounded this year than you have for the last three. So just for that purpose alone, that I would say is a much better year. Obviously, you've been through quite a trauma, and it's raw. It does take time. I'm going to tell you, I think some things we never really get over, but we learn to live with it, you know. So
yeah, very much so.
But I think you've got a much better year ahead of you, Paula. So a lot of encouragement when I am just doing these few numbers for you. So I hope that's helpful. You know, chin up.
It's very
and again,
helpful.
We're very sorry for your loss. She's fine. I know that on the other side. So,
oh, yeah.
Have a good week.
She's going to be much better. You too. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good night.
Thanks for calling, Paula. Well, that's, you know, people are going through life-altering times right now, Doug, and that's why we're here. So anytime people want to call in that we can even just give that glimmer of hope, we're happy to do that.
Yep.
It's been a great show.
It has.
David's been absolutely wonderful. So.
Yes, you know, obviously somebody who's, again, been around the block and gets it, and that's what I love about David, just real connection there. And so, you know, here we are at the end of another show. We appreciate everybody who's tuned in tonight.
It went by fast.
And please, you know, tell those who you know who might like the show, tell them about it. Visit mchschurch.org if you would like to learn more about, you know, metaphysical principles of living and belief, and of course metaphysicsinstitute.org if you'd like to get more of an education in metaphysics. Next week, I need to go grab that real quick to see what we're talking about.
Next week we're talking about, yeah, I do. Yeah. I've got it right here in my book, Love Versus Like. So that's a show everybody wants to tune in for. Commitment, integrity, and pride. We're going to talk about that. But the difference between love and like. Very, very important topic. So hopefully everybody will tune in. It's been another great show, Doug. It goes by so fast.
And as it should. And, you know, just for listeners, you know, we talk about a lot of different metaphysical topics. Because everything fits in it, you know, life skills and even anomalous phenomena and coaching and counseling and all kinds of stuff. And so if you've got an idea for a show or a topic you'd like to hear, we'd love to hear from you. Just email us at admin@mchschurch.org. You can also contact us via the website. Again, thanks to everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.